Last time we'd gotten through the fourth chapter of Daniel, so tonight we're going to begin with the fifth chapter of Daniel. Now, there are several interesting things about this fifth chapter. One is it's not exactly in the right chronological order, because this fifth chapter tells about the very end of the Babylonian kingdom, which occurred, of course, 70 years after its founding, and it occurred in 538 B.C., and it was founded in 606 B.C. So it really should come along somewhere after the seventh chapter to really be in the right chronological order, but it teaches a lesson here, and that's the main thing that we're concerned about. It begins by saying, Belshazzar, the king, made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the 1,000. Belshazzar, you notice that name is very similar to Daniel's Chaldean name of Belteshazzar. Belshazzar was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. And one strange thing is that history never did record Belshazzar as being one of the kings of Babylonia. And so that was one of the many points, or one of the points that historians have used in the past to try to say that Daniel was not an authentic book. But we have an interesting archaeological note here that's given in Haley's Bible Handbook. He says, until 1853, no mention of Belshazzar was found in Babylonian records. And Nabonidus was known to have been the last king of Babylon. To the critics, this was one of the evidences that the book of Daniel was not historical. But in 1853, an inscription was found in a cornerstone of a temple built by Nabonidus in Ur to a god which read, May I, Nabonidus, king of Babylon, not sin against thee, and may reverence for thee dwell in the heart of Belshazzar, my firstborn favorite son. Now this inscription proved then that this man named Belshazzar was the son of Nabonidus, who was the son of Nebuchadnezzar. So it would make Belshazzar the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. From other inscriptions, it has been learned from Nabonidus, Nabonidus much of the time was in retirement outside of Babylon, and that Belshazzar was in control of the army and the government, co-regent with his father, and that it was he who surrendered to Cyrus. This explains how Daniel could be the third ruler in the kingdom mentioned in verses 16 and 29. So that little archaeological note is very interesting, because it then disproves the critics' attack on the authenticity of the book of Daniel. And, of course, it proves more and more to us that although there may be things in the Bible that we can't understand, that we can't perfectly correlate, it doesn't mean the Bible's wrong simply because of our ignorance on the matter. Again, we'd like to turn over here for just a minute to Jeremiah 27, verse 7. And show how Jeremiah lays this out. And this is, again, the Bible doing this. This speaking of Babylonia. And all nations shall serve him, and his son, and his son's son, until the very time of his land come, and then many nations and great kings shall serve themselves of him. So Jeremiah says that it'll be him, speaking of Nebuchadnezzar, and his son, and his son's son, here again relating to the grandson, which would be Belshazzar. So this is the very end of the Babylonian kingdom. Nebuchadnezzar and his father Nebuchadnezzar, which has started this, and Nebuchadnezzar, then his son, and his son's name was Nabonidus. And then according to these other inscriptions, Nabonidus stayed gone most of the time, and his son reigned in his place. So although his son wasn't the official king, he was the one who was reigning in the place of his father, Nabonidus. So Belshazzar, the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the 1,000. Now, some of the wording here leaves us not sure as to whether there were 1,000 lords here or whether this means that each of these lords was lord over 1,000 other people. 1,000 would be a very large number, of course, but it's possible that he could have had 1,000 of his ruling dignitaries here, or it may be that that means that each dignitary was over 1,000 people. But they made this feast, and they drank wine before the 1,000. Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, and while he tasted the wine indicates that he was getting pretty well under the influence of alcohol. This was as a result of his having drunk the wine that he did what he did here, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives and his concubines, might drink therein. Now, he calls Nebuchadnezzar's father, but it really means his grandfather, and in the Hebrew wording here, the word father and grandfather is the same, and the word for son and grandson is the same. So what he did, he went and had them to bring the vessels that Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple over in Jerusalem, back there way back years ago when he'd sacked the temple 60, 70 years ago and brought these vessels over into the land of captivity. He went and had those vessels brought out so they could pour wine in them and drink out of them. Not only he, but he said the king and his princes and his wives and his concubines might drink therein. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem. And the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines drank in them. Now, how we would love to have been there just for the purpose of seeing those vessels, observing the artifacts from the temple, the Solomon's temple itself, not in their misuse, not in the abuse of them, but simply to have seen them. And they were no telling how many years old, hundreds of years old. They'd been in the Babylonian kingdom for about 70 years, about like that old clock up there. We think of it as quite a relic, but these things had been for hundreds of years, and now they were at their carousing and drunken feast, wanting to use them to drink out of, and they did. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver and of brass and of iron, of wood and of stone. So they had gods to all kinds of minerals and elements. Gold and silver, brass and iron, and wood and stone. All kinds of idolatrous gods that they served, and they were using these articles in the temple of the holy God to drink wine from and to praise these idolatrous gods with. In the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace, and the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Now, this is the verse that describes the famous saying that we know of as the handwriting on the wall. The king saw the handwriting on the wall. He saw this hand, the fingers of a hand, come and write something on the wall. And the writer here describes right where it was. It was on the plaster by the candle holder there. And the king saw it. Now, I'll tell you, whether you were under the influence of wine or not, this would be quite a scary thing just to see a hand and the fingers of it start writing you a message on the wall. Right in the midst of all of this revelry. And so he describes this as causing quite a change in this king. Then the king's countenance was changed, and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his loins were loosed, and his knees smote one against another. Now, there's not any passage in the Bible that's written that's intended to provoke humor and laughter, but this one comes about as near as to any I've seen in a long time, the description given of him. His thoughts troubled him, his countenance was changed, and the joints of his loins, it says, were loosed to the point that his knees knocked together. We've heard of people trembling and shaking so that their knees knocked together. Well, this actually happened to this king. The knees smote one against another, and the king cried. It provoked him then to give forth a cry of alarm and to try to rectify the problem. The king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. And the king spake and said to the wise men of Babylon, "Whosoever shall read this writing, and show me the interpretation thereof, shall be clothed with scarlet, and have a chain of gold about his neck, and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." That is, he would succeed me then as the ruler. And as this, I don't know how you would count this, whether you count Nebuchadnezzar as number one, his son as number two, and then this man that he's going to put the chain around the neck is number three, because Belshazzar was just a stand-in for his father, or whether you count Nebuchadnezzar's one and Belshazzar's two, since his father wasn't really reigning, but Belshazzar was reigning in his place, and then the other one is third. But he mentioned this several times. You'll be the third ruler in the kingdom. Now, this is a kingdom that one famine had a dominating force over. Only up to this point, 70 years, two that could really be counted as the rulers in the kingdom. And this other one then would be counted as the third ruler. But this so unnerved and so shook the king until he said, "If you can just tell me what this says, then you will be the next ruler." And we've had this, of course, before about the king calling in the astrologers and the Chaldeans and the soothsayers and all of the different variations of witchcraft that they had in the land, calling them in. Then came in all the king's wise men, but they could not read the writing, nor make known to the king the interpretation thereof. Now, the reason they couldn't read the writing was because this writing was given in the Sumerian characters and not in the Chaldean characters. And since the Sumerian characters at that time were what was actually Hebrew, and Hebrew, the land of Hebrew, the Hebrews, was a small, insignificant land. None of the great scholars worried about studying the language of the Hebrews. They were now an extinct nation anyway, and just living in captivity. So for some 70 years, nobody studied the language of the Samaritan characters. Now today, the true Hebrew that we know of today is actually Chaldean. But the Hebrew then was not Chaldean. The Hebrew then was Samaritan. So they couldn't read it. They couldn't read what it was. Nonetheless, they couldn't give an interpretation. If you can't read something, you sure can't give an interpretation. Just like the king's dream. He couldn't remember his dream. And so they couldn't interpret it. They couldn't even guess at the interpretation because they didn't know what the dream was about. And so here it is. They can't read this writing on the wall. Then King Belshazzar, greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonished. Now the queen, by reason of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banquet house. She'd learned what had happened. The word had been spread around, so she came in to see what she could do about it. Now this woman is probably the wife of Nebuchadnezzar and be the grandmother of Belshazzar. Although I don't know this strictly from the reading, this is what the scholars seem to think. And the queen spake and said, "O king, live forever. Let not thy thoughts trouble thee, nor let thy countenance be changed. There is a man in thy kingdom, in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of thy father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him. Whom the king Nebuchadnezzar thy father, the king I say thy father, made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers." So this queen said, "There's a man in your kingdom who can give you an answer to this. Your father," and she says, "thy father, I say thy father," which is probably is a way of saying thy grandfather. "Your father, Nebuchadnezzar, used him And he made him the king, the master over all the soothsayers and the magicians and the Chaldeans and the astrologers. For as much as an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of dreams and showing of hard sentences and dissolving of doubts were found in the same Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar, now let Daniel be called, and he will show the interpretation. Daniel apparently had done a lot of things, because notice the description she gives of Daniel in the first part of this 12th verse. An excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of dreams and showing of hard sentences and dissolving of doubts. Well, Daniel was just the answer, it seemed. You had a problem that you couldn't resolve, Daniel could give you the answer to it. He could resolve doubts, he could interpret hard sentences. He could give you an interpretation. He had understanding. He could interpret dreams. He had wisdom. And he had an excellent spirit. Of course, you can guess what's going to happen next. Then was Daniel brought in before the king. That'd be the next most logical step for anybody to take in this man's position. Go get Daniel. Tried everybody else. And the king spake and said unto Daniel, art thou that Daniel, which art of the children of the captivity of Judah, whom the king, my father, brought out of Jewry? He would just ask him, are you the one that was the captive brought over here from Judea? My father brought you over here? Are you the same Daniel? Now, this would make Daniel, of course, at this time, probably in the neighborhood of 90 years old. He'd been over here for 70 years now. And whatever age he was when he came would be added to 70. So if he was 15, he'd be 85. If he was 20, he'd be 90. And so he probably was in the neighborhood of some 90 years of age here now. And I have even heard of thee, that the spirit of the gods are in thee, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee. And now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me, that they should read this writing and make known unto me the interpretation thereof, but they could not show the interpretation of the thing. And I have heard of thee, that thou canst make interpretations and dissolve doubts. Now if thou canst read the writing and make known to me the interpretation thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about thy neck, and thou shalt be the third ruler in the kingdom. Then Daniel answered and said before the king, let thy gifts be to thyself, and give thy rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing unto the king, and make known to him the interpretation. Now, Daniel didn't want this position. And probably the number one reason he didn't want it is because there wasn't going to be any position. This kingdom was just fixing to come to a fast end on this very night. O thou king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. Now we're getting back to this lesson that we had in the third chapter about the fact that God sets up these kings and he removes these kings. He puts over the kingdom who he will, and he sets over the kingdom the basis of men. And so he's reviewing with Belshazzar what God has done. He said he gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him, whom he would he slew, and whom he would he kept alive, and whom he would he set up, and whom he would he put down. I think that still has to be talking about God. God caused nations to fall, caused nations to be powerful, caused nations to be conquerors, caused nations to be put down. And not only nations, but individuals. But when his heart was lifted up, now this is talking about Nebuchadnezzar here, but when his heart was lifted up, and it's possible that 19 was talking about Nebuchadnezzar too, being able to throw down these other nations and lift them up. And his mind hardened in pride, He was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. Now, this is reference now to this having to become insane because he said that I got all this on my own power, didn't recognize God as being the giver of this power, so he lost it for a period of his insanity. And we just read about that last time, and Daniel's reviewing that. And he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was with the wild asses. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointeth over it whomsoever he will. And that was the purpose of Nebuchadnezzar becoming insane. That's why he had to go out and live with the wild beasts, why he had to eat the grass like they did. He had the dew fall on him. He had his hair grow long like the feathers, his nails grew long like claws, and he was just like a wild animal. And the purpose of that was until he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointeth over it whomsoever he will. Now, if you want to underline a little passage, that's one right there to underline, because that is the theme, that's the crux now of two or three chapters in Daniel. The third chapter, and a part of this chapter. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this. You knew what happened to your granddaddy, or your daddy, whichever you want to call it, your father. You knew about this, but you haven't humbled yourself either. But hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives, thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know, and the God in whose hands thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, thou hast not glorified. So Daniel just preaches him a little sermon right here. You didn't glorify this God. Rather than that, you took the vessels from his holy temple and you profaned them, used them in an unholy way, and drunk wine out of them and praised the gods of the gold and silver and iron and brass and wood and stone. This may give us some insight, too, at this point, if we stop and look, how that it's worse to take the holy things of God and misuse them than it is to not use them at all. And explains to us maybe why Paul said to those Corinthians, when you come together, it's not for the better, but for the worse. Been better off if they hadn't even come together than to come together and do things wrong, than to pollute the communion service. Maybe it also helps explain that passage we had in Peter about the sow that's turned to the mire and the dog that's turned again to his own vomit. Been better for them had they never known the way of the Lord than to have known it and then turned away. To use these holy things of God and misuse them in such a way that you profane them and polluted them. Hebrews describes it also as treading underfoot the Son of God afresh. And so this man was in a bad condition. Then was the part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written. This is still Daniel speaking about what God's done. He just sent you a part of a hand, and he wrote this writing for you. And this is the writing that was written. Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin. And I don't know if I have the right pronunciation of that or not, but now the way this is written right here, this is in the Samaritan characters, and Clark's commentary shows the difference in the Samaritan characters and the Chaldean characters, and they're not the same at all. So a person who knew one language, didn't know the other, would have no idea what these characters even were, much less be able to read them. This is the interpretation of the thing. Now this word many means to number, or to measure, and the word tiko means to weigh, and the word phares means to divide. So Each of these words is really constituting a brief sentence, and it means to be measured, weighed, and divided. Measured, weighed, and divided. And so here's Daniel's interpretation. Meaning, God has numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. And Pharaohs, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. And as we know, when we studied this great image that Nebuchadnezzar had seen, the next kingdom that was to take over was that of the Medes and the Persians, which would primarily then be the Persians. And this was what was exactly fixing to happen now. Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet and put a chain of gold about his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler of the kingdom. In that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain, and Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. So Darius, the one who was over the Medes, took the kingdom, and then shortly after this, he consolidated with the Persians, and it became the Medo-Persian Empire. And according to history, on this night, the way Darius captured this city of Babylon, the Euphrates River, which was well guarded, discussed that last time how well it was, he just simply, and he used some of the defectors, spies, and defected from Belshazzar to help him. He caused the waters of the Euphrates River to take a different channel to go out into the marshlands, and then the riverbed going into the city became a dry bed, and then he and his men just marched in through the riverbed and captured the city. That's not discussed here, but it is in other places in history documents it. And this is the night that this happened, the night that there was the handwriting on the wall in which God, in these symbols, said, your kingdom is measured, weighed, and divided. And he said, then it's been numbered, it's been weighed and found wanting, and it's divided and given to in the hands of the Medes and the Persians. And of course, we have to think that these are very wise words and wise things, and we've heard them, you know, all along. We've heard of something that's been weighed and found wanting. And that's actually originated from this writing here in the book of Daniel. And it also lets us know today that God still, this reminds us of reading in Revelation, you know, whenever the temple was measured with this reed, that God still measures, and he still weighs, and he still tries our works and our efforts to see whether or not we're genuine, and there's coming a division. God's people are going to be divided from the rest of the people. And just as this kingdom here was divided, and this man was slain and taken out of the kingship. Now we'd like to go into the sixth chapter, and we have also fairly easy reading in the sixth chapter, so we should be able to get through it without much trouble. And here in the sixth chapter, we have another great lesson given. It's 28 verses, just like the other chapter was, but there's a great lesson here for us. And it'll be worth our time to spend the number of minutes it's going to take to read this and to get the lesson from it. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom. Now Darius was the man who had come in and captured the city of Babylon, and he then became the ruler in the nation of Babylon, the kingdom of Babylon. So we have now going from the Babylonian kingdom into the kingdom of the Medes and then eventually the Persians. Daniel was still here. Daniel lived, we know of, 2 or 3 years deep into this new king's rule, which made him an old man. And this was shortly then also before the captives were released to go back to the land of Judah. So he stayed here during the entire captivity of the Judean people in the land of Babylonia. But this Darius, who was really a foreigner at this time, he was a conqueror, it pleased him to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom. So this is the way he divided his kingdom down, the way he's going to reign it, rule it, and govern it. And over these, three presidents, of whom Daniel was first. Now, it sounds like that Daniel was maybe the first of the three presidents, but I think what he's really saying here is that Daniel...